Blog Talk Radio.
HR Happy Hour.
That was a new
one
for
you. Like that one, Shauna? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
The new one for this week. Welcome, everyone. This is HR Happy Hour. I'm Steve Bowes, of course. With me, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. How are you, Shauna?
I'm doing great.
Everything great in the HR Minions world?
Yeah, I have cookies here. You know, celebratory cookies. Everything's great.
Celebratory cookies. All right, so we'll circle back on what the celebration is about a little bit later in the show. So it is episode 47 of the HR Happy Hour. We've been at this, and we'll talk about this at the end of the show. We've been at this about one whole year, shockingly, and we're still doing this. And people are still listening, which is great. So we're pleased about that. So yeah, it is. Sort of an anniversary show as well. So this is the HR Happy Hour. The show tonight is HR and indie culture, and we're really excited. We have a great guest waiting to come on in a second once I get through all my little announcements, and we're going to have a good time tonight. The call-in number for the show is area code 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on the line and get involved in the conversation and ask a question or make a comment, and we definitely will have some time to take some calls later on in the show. If you're hanging out on Twitter tonight, hopefully you can participate along as well using our hashtag HRHappyHour, and we'll keep an eye on the tweets and comments out there as well. So, again, we're really pleased, and thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. Thanks, Shauna, and thanks for the listeners who are with us out there, and let's get right to it. Let's welcome our guests tonight. Shauna, I read a book a couple of months ago, and it absolutely was my favorite book I've read this entire year. And so I wrote a blog post about it, about indie and HR, and the author of the book, I think, saw the post, or perhaps maybe Google searched her name or something and saw it. And then once I made some contact with her, I said, "You've got to come on the show." And I'm sure she was shocked and sort of horrified by this request. But
horrified? Don't go that far.
She agreed to come on the show. So let's welcome her now. Our guest is the great Kaya Oakes.
Hey, you guys.
Hi, Kaya.
Hi.
Kaya is the author of, like I said, my favorite book I've read this year. The book is called Slanted and Enchanted, The Evolution of Indie Culture. And it's all about indie art, music, poetry, craft, you name it, you know. And it's all
very
about
cool.
Sort of the development of indie culture over the last, probably 50 years or so, Kaya, I suppose you cover in the book.
Yeah, it starts in the roughly in the 50s, so actually we're getting on about 60 years now, which I haven't been alive for that long, but it goes back to the 50s. So it was fun to research back to that era and find out what was going on back then.
Right. Yeah, Kaya is also, just by way of biography, Kaya is also an instructor at University of California at Berkeley. And she's a blogger, sort of. You know, I've read some of your posts, Kaya. I was really I'm gonna call you an infrequent blogger. Is that
I'm
fair?
A very flaky blogger. Yeah.
Yeah. But,
nice.
Yeah. Her blog and her site is at oakstown.org. That is oakestown.org. And Kai, I read a few of the blog posts this week, and I was cracking up. Some of them were just phenomenally funny and good. So hopefully you can get back into more blogging whenever you find the time.
Yeah,
well, welcome.
Summer's good for that. So thank you again.
So, Kaya, and let's just before we get into some of the subject matter, were you sort of surprised, you know, when you got the request from me to come on a show which is ostensibly about, you know, human resources and management, workforce kind of topics? Was this sort of not the normal interview you may have done in promoting the book?
Well, it's funny. This book has found so many interesting audiences. I think that one good thing about indie is that it's applicable to a lot of different, I don't want to say genres, but different modalities, I guess is the right word. In other words, the idea of being independent could be for business or politics or sports, you know, so many different things. And so I was a little bit surprised, just as I was telling you before we got on the phone, that academics tend to live in kind of a bubble, and so do writers. And so I was like, wow, this is going to be interesting because I'll have to leave the bubble for a little bit. But it's always good to do that. So,
yeah, and honestly, Kai, when I read the book, you know, I'm interested in the culture aspect of it, certainly, in some of the details and the history and the evolution that you describe. But as I read it, I didn't pick it up thinking, oh, let's find some good fodder for the show. You know, I mean, and I'll admit sometimes I do that because we're doing this.
Well, who doesn't?
We're doing this show every week, and sometimes it's difficult to come up with topics every week, but.
Sure.
As I was reading it, I found so many interesting kind of parallels and sort of really applicable kind of insights that I thought maybe would make for a good conversation tonight. And so hopefully we'll get to some of those as well. So, Kai, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners and audience about just you and your background and how you – or just how you came to write the book, Slanted and Enchanted, the Evolution of Indie Culture? What led you to sort of say, I'm going to write a book about indie culture and put all that time and effort into it?
Well, the short, long story is that I started a magazine about 7 years ago with some friends, and we just got together one night, and as you will when you're, you know, in your early 30s and had a few too many beers, we're like, let's start a magazine. And so we decided to do that, and it was an independent magazine in the sense that we didn't take advertising. Mostly because we couldn't find any advertisers.
So perhaps you would have perhaps taken it had it been available.
Oh yes, we would have. We had many meetings discussing that.
I feel the same way about this show, Kaya. Quite frankly.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly. It was sort of like, can we sell out? We would have sold out happily at a few points if somebody had offered to buy us up. But anyway, it was a fun job to do this magazine. We did it through fundraising and grants and stuff like that. And then when it ended because of the distributor went bankrupt, and so a whole bunch of magazines disappeared at the same time. They're sort of like dinosaurs now. I got a call from a literary agent, and she said, hey, I've read a couple of your articles, and do you want to write a book? And said, sure. I've been involved with indie since I was a teenager, and I'm in my 30s, late 30s, and it's just been part of my life for a really long time. So that's the long, short answer.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Kaya, let's talk a little bit about the book and sort of maybe give a, you know, we are, like I said, our listeners are HR professionals. They're smart, they're intelligent, but I don't know how cool they are, quite frankly. I'm not sure how dialed in they are to indie culture. But so can you maybe just talk a little bit about indie culture at a more macro or high level? You know, how did indie culture become distinct or distinguishable from sort of just the normal, you know, art, music, poetry kind of genres? I mean, when did indie become identifiable?
I think a lot of people really started to realize what indie was in the early 90s because of Nirvana, which I'm sure everybody has heard of, right? And because they really came, that band really came from the indie underground. They were on an indie label called Sub Pop, and then they got onto a major label, and then I was in college at that point, and I remember you couldn't go anywhere without hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit. And people started talking about them and finding out that they came from this small town scene. Well, Seattle's not a small town, but they're originally from a smaller town, and that they had really sort of networked their way, you know, like they did the sort of the band. They're very business savvy in the sense of like they met the right people who helped them get the right gigs, and then they slowly built up their reputation by playing lots of shows and driving themselves there, and then boom, they're really famous. And all of a sudden, all these people in the mainstream kind of went, well, where did this come from, you know, and where did they come from? And I think that's the first time people started to be aware that there was this subculture that had been around for 20-plus years at that point. So, yeah, that really the early 90s is sort of the tipping point,
right.
I guess. So that's sort of when most people... When you think back, if you're living in the U.S., you know, you couldn't avoid that, the grunge thing. So there you go.
Yeah, and you sort of draw, you sort of reach back in the book, Kaya. You reach back into as far back as the 50s and 60s, and you talk a lot about the poets and the beat poets and the New York poets and what was happening in those scenes. And can you, did you feel like it was easy to draw a line all the way back from, say, the Nirvana phenomenon in the early 90s all the way back to what was happening back in the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, it was easy for me just mostly because I've been involved in it, but then also there would be these weird uncovering things. Like, I guess the example I'll give you is before indie sort of became mainstream, which we can get into at some point in time, people had these little Xerox magazines. They called them zines. So if I wanted to make a magazine, I would go write one on my typewriter back in the 80s and Xerox it at the Xerox shop and then hand it out or sell it through a record store or something like that. And as it turns out, way back in the 60s, this group here in San Francisco called the Daggers, who were sort of like this anarchist experimental theater troupe of all things, they found a printing press at a thrift sale and started also putting out these little magazines. And I had no idea that this kind of small press, like underground communication, had been going on for that long. So that kind of connection came up all of a sudden by interviewing some of the Digger guys, and I was like, oh, cool, there's totally a connection there.
Yeah, that was some interesting stuff in the book. You talk about some of the efforts that that group made of they were feeding people right out in the middle of the city, as I recall, right, and just sort of giving away food and and causing a lot of the authorities certainly weren't perhaps so kind to their efforts out there in the middle of the city. But
It was San Francisco. I live in the Bay Area, and we have this reputation of, like, you know, we've all got like armpit hair and drive Priuses and eat tofu all day.
I think some of our listeners fit that bill, Kaya, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah, great. Well, you know, there's business people here, too. My husband's a computer programmer, so I see a little bit of that. But anyway, you know, in any, and I think this is probably true in your guys' field, too, anytime somebody tries to do something differently, the first thing that happens is that people are afraid of it. And so that's true in creative work and in anything really. And if they like to get attention, which these early kind of indie pioneers did, they liked attention. So the Digger guys would, you know, set up in the middle of the street and have a soup kitchen on a traffic island with people driving around in order to get people to come see their next theater show. So again, like, people freaked out and said, what the hell is that? But it worked. So there you go.
Hey, Kai, I've got let me just do a quick reset. We're about 15 minutes into the show already, and one thing we've noticed, Kai, we've done these shows now for a year. An hour seems like a really long time, and I get nervous every time we start the show. Like, man, can we fill an hour of whatever topic it is? And,
yeah, for sure.
We've never had a problem doing it.
Right, and the next thing I know, the show's over, but we're about 15 minutes in. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on the line and ask a question or leave a comment. Also, add on Twitter, HR Happy Hour is our hashtag. And, Kaya, a few tweets have come through on our hashtag, and they're sort of asking about or sort of commenting that you talked about zines, and you talk about zines a lot in the book and how important they were to the sort of the development of indie culture and how it would spread from town to town. And a few of our commenters said the blogs are the new zines. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Will you make that parallel?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's been true for, I mean, how long have blogs been around now? 10 plus years. I remember the first blogs on like Open Salon back in the 90s. And really, I think because it's free and because anybody can write about any topic, you find these little subcultures in the blog world, and then you meet friends that way, and then you get information, and you're able to build a network. And so that's exactly what zines did. It's just that now you don't have to go to the copy shop, you know, and you just go get your computer, and there you go.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting that perhaps I wonder what that impact is, and I sort of had that down as a question to sort of come to later in the conversation, the impact or the effect or influence of new technologies like blogs, like social networks, and sort of the ubiquitous nature of the internet and things, how that affected indie culture or how it continues to affect indie culture.
I think it's been mixed. I mean, on the one hand, and the book, you know, as you know, it kind of ends. I kind of deliberately ended it without attacking the whole internet question because that would have been a whole other book. You know what I mean?
Right.
Since it came out, I've thought about this a lot, and like it's both good and bad. The good side of social networking and the technology on indie is that it's made it much more hands-on. In other words, like you could make a whole album on your laptop using GarageBand and then put it online and not even, you know, have to go through getting a record deal. There's so many musicians who build up an audience just through the internet. And that's great, but then the overload factor starts to happen, which is that you start to look for indie, you know, what's the new indie music I want to listen to, and there's 5 billion.
Too many choices now?
Too many choices, right, and there's this kind of, you got to get a little overwhelmed with the possibilities for newbies, I guess. It can be a little bit intimidating how much stuff is out there, and I totally get that because I drift in and out of listening to music, for example, and come back and everyone's talking about this new band, and I go, where did they come from? So, yeah, so stuff moves a lot faster now, and I think that's great in terms of more people are able to participate, but it does make it a little bit harder to jump in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, and I think there was an interview you had in the book, I believe. I can't remember who it was from, but or perhaps this was just you observing this. Like the internet and, say, the development of sort of the MySpace culture in the music area as well. Mm-hmm. You can't even consider pressing a record or going out on tour if you didn't have some, you know, certain number of hits on your MySpace page, right? Like that was like the validation was coming even before you got out there and tried to start spreading your message. It was happening online, right?
Totally. That was that's totally true. I think you have to have an online platform. I mean, even with this book, you know, I'll be frank here, like I didn't have a Twitter before I had a book.
Shock,
no.
Kaya.
I don't even own a smartphone. Oh, God.
Kaya has no smartphone? Oh.
No.
Really?
No, it's really embarrassing to all of my friends who have iPhones. They go, why don't you have a smartphone? But I'm just haven't, well, anyway. but the publisher said, hey, guess what? You have to promote a lot of this stuff yourself, right? So the publisher puts the book out there, but you still have to do a lot of the work. And so they said, get a Twitter, you know, make a Facebook page for the book, which it has. I don't update it much anymore. But and start, you know, blogging more often. I was blogging a lot more a year ago when it came out. And that kind of thing is still very much, the onus is on the creator. So that's true for bands, that's true for writers, and I'm pretty sure that's true for a lot of you guys too.
Oh yeah, no, certainly that. Like I said, Kaya, when I read the book, certainly I felt there were a lot of parallels between what I saw in the book, and specifically in some of the things I want to get into, and how indie culture, particularly in the bands, like the chapters where you wrote about some of the early indie bands, like the Minutemen, Husker Du, Mission of Burma, and how they helped to spread their message, and more specifically, I thought maybe you could comment a little bit about on the culture of collaboration and networking that was sort of inherent in sort of those early indie efforts and what that meant to them and sort of maybe perhaps what it means to us today.
Well, you couldn't survive without people to collaborate with in the early days, when I really admire a lot of these guys who I say guys because there weren't a lot of, this was the downside, is that there weren't a lot of women involved in indie at the beginning. It was kind of a sexist, the punk scene, which a lot of the music, you know, that we hear now evolved out of, was pretty sexist. And so it was hard for women to be in bands because they were intimidated and stuff. But anyway, that's a whole other tangent. The thing about the nature of collaboration that Mike Watt from the Minutemen and I talked about a lot is that you really, if you don't have a network of people to help you out, so you get your band together, and then let's say you want to play a show, you can't get, back in the 80s, you couldn't get booked into a venue unless you knew another band who would take you along with them and say, you know, you're going to open for us, and here's the club owner's phone number, and stuff like that. So they really became kind of interdependent. And he talked about how even to this day when he goes out on the road, Mike Watt is still very much about driving his own van. You know,
right,
what I
right.
mean? 50-year-old guy drives himself on tour, which is either great or sad, depending on your perspective. He's very happy with that. But anyway, he said they still go on the same tour circuit that they went on in 1978 because those venues and those cities, you know, still have that scene that was there way back then. So you really start to depend on other people who know the same people that you do, or you meet people through them, because when you don't have a lot of funding, you have to do a lot of stuff yourself.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you talked about quite a bit in the book, Kaya, is just even going back, even reaching back before sort of the bands in the 80s, in the late 80s and early 90s, but even back to the beat poets and the New York school poets was the relentless sort of promotion of other people's work and how important
mm-hmm.
that was to the scene. And I wonder if you could just comment a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, again, it comes down to the idea that you promote somebody else's work because then in turn they're probably going to do the same thing for you in the future. And so there's a lot of quid pro quo, I'll scratch my back, you'll scratch yours, except that people actually did it. You know what I mean? Like, in the real world, at least at the place where I work, you know, you'd say, I'll do this for you, and then 5 years later, you know, you'll do this for me, and they still haven't done it. So, but because, again, it's that issue of when you don't have a lot of money or resources, other people are your resources. And so that's where the innovation, I think, came in, that sense of, like, I'm going to keep promoting my friends. People would talk about, I'm going to go do a poetry reading, you know, back in the 50s, the Beat Generation, Allen Ginsberg would go do a poetry reading, and he would read nothing but poems by other people who were his friends and talk about them and how great they were. But in turn, they also would do the same for him.
Right. And so did you get the sense that those artists and poets and bands felt like they were competing with each other, or did you feel like the sense was more that they were all sort of in it together, competing against mainstream or against some external, you know, enemy, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kind of there used to be, and I would say this has lessened quite a bit in the last few years. There used to be a great distrust of the man, so to speak.
I don't like the man. I'll tell you right now.
I can hear the quotations around that as you say the word. That's awesome.
The man is keeping me down. I'm going to be on record as saying that.
Well, the man can be whatever you want, but, you know, for a lot of us, it's like the IRS or whatever. But but for
right.
indie people, the man is the mainstream, and there was this kind of fear of like, oh my God, so-and-so's going to sell out, they're going to sign a major record label deal, or they're going to publish their book with a mainstream publisher, and that's awful, and how horrible, and it was seen as a betrayal of the community, because the community values were very much about DIY, do it yourself.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is some people did sell out. They took the money and ran and forgot about the people who they'd climbed over on the way up, and some people didn't, and they put the money back into, you know, the indie community. And there's lots of examples. I guess I'll just plug myself here and say, read the book and find out more.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Kaya, plug yourself. We're promoting the book. I'm going to tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I want to brag about the power of the show, but I think we've sold at least 4 books so far.
That's great.
Totally.
That's probably more than I've sold in the last 4 months. So.
That's right.
Well, Lynn and China both seem to have bought one right away, so yeah.
That's awesome.
We have seen some tweets about folks who are downloading the book and buying the
cool.
book as we speak, so that's cool.
Right.
And so,
I do want to come clear. I do have a Twitter now, by the way. I don't have a smartphone, but I do have a Twitter. I do text. So I'm not
who doesn't?
A Luddite, and I love my MacBook and take it with me everywhere. So there
yeah.
you go.
Well, now I know, and so we've been, you know, promoting the show as well. And Kaya, this show, you know, I know you don't know this, but this show sort of started a year ago, almost as a creation of interaction and sort of friends that had met on Twitter. So the Twitter sort of aspect of the show and the Twitter back channel is a really important part of this show. And so as we've been promoting the show, right, I know you have a Twitter account. You know, it's at Kaya Oakes, KayaOakes. We've been including your Twitter name in our promotion quite a bit. And
yeah,
you
should have a lot of at.
Yeah, so if you check your Twitter page and see your mentions, there's going to be 100 of them probably from folks, you know, who are listening to the show or helping to promote the show. So it's very much a part of what happens on this show. So, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
Let me do a quick reset. We're on the HR Happy Hour. We're about halfway through the show. We're with Kaya Oakes, the author of Slanted and Enchanted, The Evolution of Indie Culture. And we are calling number 646-378-1086. There's quite a lot of people hanging out on the line. If any of you guys want to come on and ask a question or make a comment, just press one right now, and I'll get you on board. And if not, just hang out and listen. We're having a good conversation with Kaya about indie and music, art, and everything else. So, Kaya, you sort of hinted out, we joked a little bit about sort of advertising, selling out to
uh-huh.
the man. So I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about that. And sort of, you know, as indie sort of evolved and it grew up in bands or artists or writers kind of, some of them, right, maybe perhaps the lucky ones or the ones who wanted to got accepted into mainstream and they quote-unquote sold out. Do you feel just that was always inevitable, that once you achieved in India a certain level of notoriety or acclaim that you couldn't stay true to your roots? Is that sort of part of the deal with indie?
You know, I think that's changed a lot, again, in the last decade or so. I think that there's no stigma, the stigma of I sold, I quote unquote sold out, has pretty much evaporated, because I think, let's talk specifically about music. So many bands, you know, the White Stripes, the Flaming Lips, bands that lots of people like and listen to, who started on indie labels, went into the mainstream, and the good thing that happened is that they changed the mainstream. In other words, they brought their weird, I don't know if you guys know the Flaming Lips, but they perform in these, they wear costumes on stage, and they're just, there's a movie about them called The Fearless Freaks, and that kind of describes it. And they brought that aesthetic of creativity and oddity and eccentricity to the mainstream. And as a result, the indie community was like, oh, that's great. You know, those guys, they're in their 50s. They were plugging away for years and years in the indie world. And when the opportunity came for them to be and reach a bigger audience, people thought that was awesome. So that's kind of an example of it not being a bad thing. You know, another example, I guess everybody knows about Green Day. They're from here, the Bay Area. Does that ring a bell?
Just a little.
They're pretty popular, right? And again, they went to a major label pretty quickly. They had, I think, one or two albums on a small label. But they've been, you know, they continue to, they have their own indie label that they run, even though they're on a major label. And, you know, they still pop up and play shows at small clubs. They have a alternate band name that they use that I won't give away.
Wow, so super secret name, huh? Wow,
super secret name. It's really easy to find out by Google. Anyway, so that's just an example of the fact that when people talk about selling out now, it doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Yeah, and sort of why what I was thinking of and why that's interesting to us, and I sort of wrote about some of this on the blog when I was kind of writing about the book and some of the parallels that I thought I could try to make to workforce and HR topics was that, Kai, you said that sometimes that the indie influence can change the mainstream, right, in arts. It can influence it to such an extent that it actually changes it. And I just wonder, you know, I'll just throw this out to the audience as well, how the things that many of us are involved in, right, we've been part of this HR and social media world, and we've been putting on events. Like, we recently had an event, Kai, in Chicago called the HR Evolution, which was, you know, our equivalent of the sort of indie meeting of sort of new thinking and sort of like-minded people who are thinking about new ideas and new processes and human resources and sort of workforce topics. And I just wonder, you know, do we really think that we're going to be able to really influence sort of the mainstream corporate culture as well? Like, do we think that might happen, or are we sort of destined to basically be driving around in our vans, right, across the countryside, you know?
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I think there's a ripple effect. I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but, I mean, the ripple effect would be something like I was just talking about when a band that's eccentric or strange sounding or strange looking all of a sudden becomes really popular, all of a sudden there's room for other eccentric, strange things to also become popular. Do you see what I mean?
That's a good point.
So I think what you're talking about is that in any time you have something that's kind of an underground movement, and for you guys that might be, I don't know, this radio show, when enough people start to talk about it and be interested in it and it brings a new idea, then that can in turn influence lots of other people.
Yeah,
it's not always that cut and dry, but that's ideally what will happen.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, let's take a call. We have a caller who wants to come on board. Hi, area code 918. Are you there?
I'm here, Brian from Tulsa.
Brian, how are you tonight?
Hi.
I am doing great. What an awesome show. I'm totally immersed. So I wanted to ask if you've heard of my buddy's indie band in Oakland, Jack Hill Jill.
Yeah, I've heard of them, but I haven't seen them play. So are they sort of like recently evolved or?
Yeah, I mean, you probably, the last 5 years, they had a bunch of other names. My buddy Revic is kind of the lead singer on that, and they're pretty crazy and totally on the outer loops. I think they'd look at the Green Days and go, "Come on, total commercialization, sell out." You know, as they're driving, you know, the broken van across the bay, but
oh,
awesome, right there in your area. So
that's great. I'll check them out and see if they're playing anytime soon. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah.
Brian. Thanks so much. I didn't know you were going to come out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, with that kind of a question. Are you kidding me? Fantastic.
Hey, Green. Come on, Green Day is my for the radio show is my exit point. I Green Day every day, so I'm all about it. It's in my fabric. So
Green Day every day. Nice.
Yeah, so very cool. I appreciate it.
Hey Brian, thanks so much for the call. I'm just checking quickly on the Twitter stream. I knew we had some questions flying in.
People are really chatty.
Flaming Lips. We'll ask. Okay. I will ask China. This is China Gorman, China is a superstar in the human resources world. Kaya, and she's asking if I will ask you if you've observed or noted in your experience any corporate cultures that you would sort of look at it and call indie. Do you get the sense of that, or is that something that's sort of beyond your, you know, what you're interested in?
Well, I'll definitely admit that it's beyond my field of expertise, but I think
don't let that stop you on the show.
Okay.
I
will refer you to a book by someone who I think is really smart, and his name's Rob Walker. He writes a column for the New York Times Magazine called Consumed, and he has a book called Buying In, and it's the subtitle of the book is something like The Secret Relationship Between What We Buy and Who We Are. And he talks about these different corporations and companies that have gone from underground to mainstream. And so in each chapter of the book, he talks about – and he uses Apple as an example. And I interviewed Rob for my book, and we talked a lot about iPods and how iPods are such an individualistic thing. You know, you think you buy it and you load it up with your taste, your independent, quote unquote, taste. And yet we all have them. You know, we all go to the gym and the white headphones, right? And so it's this kind of combination. Apple's, they're very innovative. I mean, again, I live in the Bay Area. Everybody talks about Apple here. And they're sort of, Steve Jobs just does whatever the hell he wants, right? And so, and then we all follow along, right? But Google also, I think they're very kind of indie-minded. They're very creative. They really kind of forge a path. I'm trying to think of another example.
Could it be that Apple's brainwashing us through those white headphones?
I think they are, yeah, because I thought, I'm never going to buy one of those iPads. And then as soon as I saw somebody at work who had one, I really wanted it.
Yeah, I totally have iPad envy right now.
I know. They're cool, right? I think, they're so tiny, I think. Oh, gosh, I could take this anywhere. And then the problem is there's no keyboard, but for a writer, that's not good.
Yeah, I wouldn't let that stop me. Hey, guys, we have another caller who wants to jump on board, and so let's do that. Area code 571, you are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Shauna, it's China.
China,
hey,
how
China.
Are you?
I'm great. I'm just great. I'm just so interested in this conversation, Kaya, and I just downloaded your book. I can't wait to read it. I'm going to be on a plane next week, so I'll get it then. But this the indie culture that you're describing that is so kind of purposefully other, right? I mean, it's purposefully not what's the expected route, what's the expected behavior, what's sort of expected by, you know, the majority. And so when I think about that, so we're mostly HR folks, and I think about that in a in a corporate culture kind of environment, and the sort of the willful, I don't care what everybody thinks, this is what we want to do and we're going to do it. So in that regard, the first time, so I'm sort of thinking out loud here, the first time Apple came up with something new, that might have been indie. But now that everybody's got it, it's expected. It's not the other. It's the majority. And so I think about other organizations and other I'm trying to get a handle on how an indie corporate culture would sort of actually work, and maybe it is sort of a Google, you know, it's sort of a we're going to do what we want, and everybody else can, you know, take a long walk off a short pier.
Yeah,
to some degree, was that Goldman? Was that Lehman Brothers?
So their interpretation of indie was basically just breaking the law, doing their own thing, and sort of, right?
Well, I don't know that it was breaking the law. It wasn't smart, but I'm not so sure they broke, right? I'm not so sure that they broke any. I mean, Congress hasn't found any laws that they've broken. They're creating laws now that would have made it against the law, but so where does indie become, and reading the Twitter stream, where does indie become more about, or does indie become really eccentric as opposed to sort of willful? Does that make sense?
I think I understand what you're saying, China. I think you're talking about the kind of one of my students. I really learn a lot from working with college students because they discover things way before anybody else does. And one of my students made a really good point this semester, and I'm going to use another music example, sorry, of Lady Gaga. Do we all know who she is?
Yeah.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
And how we all think she's really eccentric because of her appearance, but her music is very poppy and kind of, it's not, I like her music, but it's not especially challenging music, but her image is what is interesting to people. And so I think that's kind of what you're talking about, that parallel between this looks original, but when we chip down past the surface, is it really innovative? And I think Lady Gaga is sort of like, she's sort of like that. She looks really great, and she looks so fascinating, and she behaves so strangely, but when you get down to what she does musically, it's not really that challenging. So I don't know. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not sure there is an answer. I'm just trying to think about it. One of our Twitter friends, Mike Vandervoort, just wrote, so Zappos was probably indie until they sold out and became the man.
Yeah, didn't
you know?
Amazon
that might
them?
Actually be right.
Yeah. That's true. I love Zappos. I have a shoe fetish, so I do. It's not very indie, is it? They had this.
Depends on the style of the shoes, I think, Kyle.
Yeah, right. I mean, wasn't their corporate culture sort of like free-for-all, we're having fun? I remember every time you went to the site, there were pictures of people's dogs, and they had this kind of reputation of being very innovative, and then I guess was it that they Amazon bought them? Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And now
they sold out. They sold out, right?
Everyone's waiting to see whether they're going to become Amazonized, and you're going to lose that personal touch that Zappos had. Whether it was a real personal touch or not, I don't know. But to me, I always felt like, hey, my shoes came the next day. That's awesome. So yeah, I think they're a good example of, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, let me do a quick reset of the show. We got 15 minutes to go. We're on HR Happy Hour with our guest, Kaya Oakes. We're talking about indie culture. We're trying China to tie this back somewhat into HR and the world of work.
I think we're doing great at that.
Thank you. I hope so. But
I think
hey,
you're doing fabulous.
As I said, when I read a great book, I said I'm booking that author. Damn it! And
totally.
I don't care what the book is about. Kai is with us, and we have about 15 minutes to go. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. We'll take a couple more calls if we can, and I do have like our sort of follow-up question about creativity and sort of finding creative people and fostering creativity in the organizations that we'll try to get to in a second. But we do have another caller who wants to jump on board, so I will take area code 404. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Jim. I'm calling from Florida.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hey there. I was kind of interested about the whole topic and everything. Just trying to catch up because I came in a little bit late and kind of picked up what's going on, but I was just kind of surprised when I went on here that there's an actual blog talk radio show for HR, and I was trying to get more of a feel of what you guys talk about every week.
All right, great. Well, this is great. Thanks for joining us and listening in.
Yeah, because I'm actually and I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but I'm in the profession myself, so I was just trying to find out. Oh, hey, this might be something kind of cool to check out.
Oh, it's very cool,
Jim. Something
cool
to check out.
It's very cool. There's no doubt about
that. It's our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, really? Congrats.
Yeah. Thank
all right.
You.
Well. Thanks. Hang out with us, and you know, what other HR shows on a Thursday night are you talking about? You know, the flaming lips. I mean, that is not. And I've
really?
Said this, and I've said this a couple times, Kai. I always make the joke. You know, people, the HR people, the workforce people, get a bad rap, right? They get a bad stigma. But I've said this many times. There's no accounting happy hour radio show. There's no,
right.
You know, purchasing department happy hour show that I'm aware of.
I used to work in packing and shipping, so
yeah,
we wouldn't have had a radio show about tape guns and postal meter needs.
That is fascinating, but still.
Terribly so.
Can you carry a whole year of that?
So do you guys, this is like you guys are in the HR field yourself too?
Yeah, everybody associated with the show more or less is in and around the HR field in some capacity or another. So yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out because I mean I've been doing it now for a few years and everything, and obviously it's my profession and I definitely enjoy it. But I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what I guess you guys have a lot more passion for it than I do because when I get home, the only thing I want to think about is music and football and everything but work, you know.
Well. You know, we're talking about music, and we have
yeah.
talked about football on the show before, not tonight.
Yeah, we've done two sports shows.
We have.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, just Thursday nights at 8 Eastern, so hang out with us, Jim. Thanks for the call.
Totally.
We've got another call, and this honestly, Kaya and Shauna, based on a blog post today from our friend Lori at Punk Rock HR. Kaya,
yeah.
One of our best bloggers in the HR space. Her blog is called Punk Rock
totally.
HR. It's probably great. The best blog in the space, I think.
Right,
and,
we love her.
She wrote a post, and I wonder if this is her, because she wrote a post about area code analysis today, and we will bring up area code 919 on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, guys. It is Lori Rudeman. Hello. Hi, Kaya.
Hey, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hey, guys. Well, I was just calling in, and Kaya, I'm a big fan of yours just based on the show. I ordered your book off
Thank
of
you.
Amazon, and there's only one book left.
What?
Yeah, so
That's
order more
great.
Today, people. That's good news. So,
yeah.
Steve, you're moving merch tonight.
I'm moving
That's
merch.
Oh,
I can
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
So I'm calling in with just a very simple question. There's been a lot of talk on the Twitter back channel tonight about selling out and whether or not that's necessarily a bad thing. So I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about that, maybe just a little bit more in terms of music and also business. When can selling out be a good thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And honestly, I've had to answer it for myself in the last year because, as I said, I came from working on an independent magazine, and then my first book came out with an indie press and I think sold 300 copies. You know, it's very hard to find. But I got a book offer. You know, my book proposal went to an auction, and I had offers from huge publishing houses, and the one I ended up with is pretty big, and it's a big corporate publisher, and some people who read the book said, what the hell is she doing publishing a book about indie on a big corporate publisher? And my response was, it's a book about indie, and I'm interviewing people from indie in order to let them speak for themselves, and if the corporate publisher means more people can learn from them, then that's, you know, why is that selling out? It's not like I made that much money anyway.
Well, before tonight, Kaya, before tonight, after tonight,
yeah,
maybe a
thanks,
different story.
Guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to go buy that iPad now. No, writers don't make a lot of money anyway. But the point of the story is, getting back to your question, I think that it's just about retaining the values that you brought in the door with you. In other words, if you're a musician and
Ooh.
You sign a big record deal,
I like that.
And you had great community values, and then you become famous and you keep them and you pass them on to other people, you're not selling out. It doesn't matter what label you're on or how many records you sell. And I think that could be true for businesses, too. I'm a great admirer of businesses that do social justice work, community work, that give back to communities. And, you know, I try to put my money towards those businesses wherever they are, try to find them. So I think that maybe that answers your question a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. That's really helpful. I think there's just such mystique around the concept of, you know, being famous and the tension with selling out, and I think a lot of that is overstated, to your point. And
yeah.
A lot of writers and musicians and people who are in the arts, while they seem to be famous, it doesn't necessarily equate to wealth, and maybe it's about what you do once you have that platform. So, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Cool.
All right, well, I'll take the rest of the show off the air. Have a good
hey,
rest
Hey, Lori,
of the show,
thanks so much.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks so much for calling in. Area code 919, my favorite new area code. Based on what I learned today. Thanks so much. Hey, we've just got a couple minutes left to go. Kai, I wanted to circle back to one last sort of question I had, and really just a statement in a way. Before the show, we talked a little bit about this week there was a study released that came out of IBM where they surveyed a whole bunch of corporate CEOs. And they asked the CEOs, what's the most important quality or competency that a CEO would need today in this market, in this economic climate, to succeed and to sort of achieve success? And the number one quality or competency came back from this survey of CEOs as creativity. That was number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we ask a bunch of CEOs, what's the most important thing? And they all come back and say, creativity is the most important thing. And, I mean, isn't that fundamentally the primary driver of most of what's happened in indie and continues to happen in indie? I mean, the creative people doing things on their own, on their own accord, on their own drive and initiative. And so what I'm wondering is, do you have any suggestions at all for, say, the HR person, the corporate executive, the manager, to sort of to help find or foster that kind of creativity or as close as they could get inside their organizations?
Well, to answer that question in a roundabout way, which is how I tend to answer questions, as you haven't figured that out by now.
That's okay.
It comes from 12 years
no
of
problem.
Teaching college students. But I think that, yeah, you know, creativity is still the most important thing for indie artists, whether they end up with a huge record contract or if they end up putting their tunes on MySpace and five people hear them. The bottom line is that they you know, to quote Frank Sinatra, they did it their way, right?
Yeah.
And so that can also, again, I think that innovation and originality, anybody can recognize that when they see it, no matter what the modality is, you know. I'm a big fan of reading The New Yorker every week, and I'm not a scientist, but if there's a fascinating story about a science discovery that's completely innovative and this kind of rogue scientist who went out on her own and made this discovery, that's a fascinating story, and I think we can all learn from it. So in answer to your question, yeah, the bottom line is still being creative means being adventurous. So there you go.
Yeah, it's a good point, Kaya, and I think over time from even things like it's sort of boring, right, as this IBM study, or just things we see in our everyday sort of interactions and you know, what we're hearing about what's becoming more and more important, right, the knowledge economy, creativity, innovation, right, the things that are being valued and the things that organizations are constantly seeking to extract either from their own workforce or from the people they're looking to hire, right? In many ways, to me, as I read the book, it just seems so similar to the types of qualities that you talked about, which really drove a lot of the pioneers in indie, whether it was music or writing, art, crafting, as the case may be. It's so similar, right, to what makes those people successful or at least successful on their own terms. And what organizations are claiming, at least, that they're looking for is remarkably similar to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I just made that up, Shauna, but I believe it.
Wow.
I absolutely do.
Steve.
Yeah, that's right. I thought about this a lot. So we just have a couple of minutes left in the show, and I want to leave a minute or two at the end to just talk about what's coming up on the show. So, Kaya, first of all, many, many thanks for you for taking the time to come on the show tonight. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It was actually pretty fun, and I wish you guys lots of luck. It's great that you've kept this up for a year. We talk about in indie, if something survives for a year, that's pretty amazing.
Does that make us sellouts?
No, not at all.
But we'd be willing to sell out.
Exactly. We need to all
totally.
Have it. T-shirts that they will sell out, right? Yeah. But no, it was a lot of fun, and thank you guys, and thank you everybody who listened too.
Yeah, it's great. So, Kai, you can find her book, Slanted and Enchanted: The Evolution of Indie Culture. There's one copy left on Amazon.
And they
have used copies
been
selling them
too. And they have Kindle and Kindle for iPhone and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, all the high-tech things, right? You can get it there. And also, Kaya's website is oakstown.org. That's OAKESTOWN.org. She's an infrequent blogger, like I said, but some of her posts were outstanding. And if we had more time, I'd ask you about that whole your take on the Amazon and Macmillan publishing kind of squabble, which I read about, which was fascinating.
Yeah, I got stuck in the middle of that. So, but yeah, if anybody's interested to hear my opinion, feel free to drop me a line.
Cool. And Kaya is on Twitter, you know,
yep.
She's at,
she is
at
on Twitter.
Kaya Oakes, KayaOakes. So, Kaya, again, thanks so much, and I really
appreciate you
coming on tonight. Shauna, for us, just I wanted to make a quick couple of quick announcements. We are really pleased and thankful that we've been doing this for a year, and people are still listening and agreeing to come on the show. And
we love you all.
Shauna, thanks to you for all your hard work this year.
Well, thanks to you, Steve.
It's been a really fun year, and hopefully the folks out there listening have, enjoyed the show tonight as well as, you know, the shows that we've done in the past and what's coming up. As to what's coming up, just a couple quick ones. Next week, Shauna, tell us about next week's show because you're in charge of next week.
I know. I'm going to actually be running the show. It's going to be kind of scary for me, but I think I'll manage it. We're going to be talking about the women of HR. We're launching the site finally, so all the details will be had next week.
Cool. So the Women of HR show, that's going to be a big show. Women taking over the HR happy hour, which will be fun. And then the week after that, we're really excited. We booked Dave Ulrich, the professor and
Very
author,
cool.
big-time HR speaker. And so Dave Ulrich will be coming on June 10th. And after that, who knows, the end of June we'll be at Gettysburg. I'll be doing a show from the Gettysburg battlefield area, doing my version of the 4 score and 7 year ago thing probably. And so that'll be fun as well. So thanks so much, everybody. Shauna, if you wanted to open up everybody else's lines for a little after show chat, we can. Kaya, if you care about hanging out for a little after show recap, please feel free to hang out with us for a few minutes. And
Absolutely.
And that's it. So thanks so much again to Kaya, and thanks, Shauna. Thanks, everybody who listened and called in tonight. And good night from the HR Happy Hour.
Good night.
Hello, world, in a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing.
who's still hanging out with us.
Wow,
the after show.
You let that go.
you know, thanks. I had to make sure the live stream was cut off. This is just a little spillover show. Kaya, I don't know if you're still with us or not, but we're not live streaming anymore, but everything we say does get recorded to the permanent archive of the show.
So don't say anything.
Well, thanks so much for hanging out. Great, Kai. Great job tonight. I loved it.
Thanks.
This was probably my favorite show, like, of a long time.
I didn't know if we were going to be able to top last week, but we did.
Oh, hey, that's great. No, I enjoyed it. Like I said, promotion for the book was really heavy last summer, and then I kind of took a break from it for a while. So it's kind of good to revisit these things after a while. I don't know about you guys, but, like, if you really work on a project for several years, you get so sick of it, and then you need to step back.
I know that feeling.
Yes, I'm sure you do. And so I've been stepping back, and now I'm happy to kind of reexamine it with a little bit of brain space. So I loved all the comments. I was looking at the Twitter that the comments, like, is medical marijuana illegal in California?
We love Frank.
Why does she sound so mellow? I will have one now. I'm completely sober.
There were a couple of mellow comments. That's fine. You know, it is a weird kind of thing, Kaya, what happened with the show, and it's great. I mean, the show kind of got invented via people chatting on Twitter a year ago, and so the Twitter back channel is a huge part of the show, and it's fun to look at, and it also really helps expand the reach of the show.
Great. You know, like I said, I haven't used Twitter that much, but it has connected me to some other writers, which is really great because, honestly, we're so bad at talking to one another that we can kind of go online and be gregarious and social. And it's been good for that. So,
you know, and I apologize, Kaya, because I didn't get a chance to ask this during the live stream, but this will make the archive. I meant to ask you, so what's next? I read that you've got a book proposal sort of in the works, and can you comment at all about that and where that's going?
Yeah, I'm desperately seeking a publisher. I decided to do 180 and write about a whole different topic. So I'm actually writing a book about religion. I guess indie could be kind of a religion, but but I got really interested in this idea of how religion and faith sort of shapes people's identities. It sort of spun off of the indie idea in a weird way. And, yeah, that's a vague description of what I'm doing because I hate to jinx it, but I will say that it's been really fun to research and learn all these things about how people believe in religion and why. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Once that goes through, Kai, and that's you're doing your promotion, I hope you'll come back and talk
about it. Yeah. We can talk about HR and religion.
We'll figure it out.
Oh,
we'll
make
the connection
at all.
Yeah.
That would be really funny. All right, I should go. it's dinner time out here on the West Coast, but thank you guys so much.
All right,
much.
Well, thanks so much for a great show. We really appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, well, I'm still here. Who's still here? No one? All right. I guess we're out of here, Sean. Aw,
people aren't chatty tonight. That's okay.
All right, well, great. It was a fun show. Let's get out of here. And, I can't.
Well, happy anniversary, Steve.
Yeah, same to you. And we'll look forward to a great show next week and in the coming weeks as well. So, great.
Very cool.
All right, good night, everyone.
Night, everyone.